Hello and welcome to another episode of Dez and Marco.
I'm Dez.
And I'm Marco. How are you, Dez?
Not too bad. As I was telling you in private, summer is now fully here. I've had my first proper barbecue of the season. As far as I'm aware, everyone is still alive. So, success.
Oh, everyone? You mean your guests?
Everyone.
Okay, yes.
And how are you?
Good. Summer is upon us indeed. And I stayed home all day today because I'm slightly addicted to Tears of the Kingdom. But we'll talk about it in a little bit. But first off, Dez, what beer have you picked this time?
I was going to pick a beer out of one of my sort of crafty selections, which I buy for the show. And I've realized that I've come to like the bottom of the pile and they're all stouts. And I just could not face a stout.
No. Yeah, I know what you
and
mean.
And not only were they stouts, they were like Dez stouts. Things like chocolate sundae stout. And I'm not even joking. So that will come up in the show at some point. Anyway.
Stick around when the weather gets a little bit colder. Dez will have.
I.e. next week in Scotland. So this was the only one I found, which is summery and refreshing. It's basically called Polar Ice Walls. And as far as I can tell, it's meant to be a lager and it's inspired by the mythological Norse mythology ice walls, which are meant to keep the water from flowing off the earth because they thought the earth was flat.
Of course.
So yeah, it's a London craft brewery called Wildcard Brewery. And this beer is called Polar Ice Walls. I have never had this brewery before, so it will be curious to see what it's like. How about you?
So I picked a beer from a brand called Brand. Yeah, it's Dutch Pilsner from this brewery, the Brand Brewery, that has been founded in 1340. So it's quite old and it's like from the south of the Netherlands. Yeah, other than that, it's just a Pilsner.
I can just imagine the boardroom in 1340 with like these execs where we're like, we need an on-brand brand. And everyone's like, Brand.
Wonderful job. Everybody gets a raise.
Yeah, quick, to the tavern.
Yeah, but like a modern day boardroom.
Yes,
like
but in the Middle Ages.
Like 1920 suits, but in the 1340s. Anyway, Dez, cheers.
Cheers.
So, to start off with the news, there's a couple of bits of news that
Can I interrupt you just for 1 second? Can I start with the apology section?
Oh, we've got something to apologize for already.
At the end of our last episode, we said we were going to review Tears of the Kingdom, which, as you said, you've been playing nonstop today. I've tried to play it as much as I can, and trust me, that's been a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I don't think I'm anywhere near ready to give it a comprehensive review.
No, of course not. There's no way. I mean, I think you mentioned it to me that there's people already speedrunning it in less than an hour, but I've played a significant amount of hours and I'm nowhere near being done with it. So we'll review it as it goes. Maybe we can talk about like our first impressions today.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the review will come in a couple of months, I would say, before.
So we'll give maybe our first impressions later on if there's time. But apologies for not giving a full definitive review if that's what you were waiting for. So I'm sure our many, many, many listeners will be understanding.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, back to our regularly scheduled show. The news. So our favorite saga of this season, the Japanese Moonlander. Now we know why it crashed. So it crashed, like it's official. Scientists have confirmed it. And the reason was essentially it was a software glitch. So it was supposed to land in a crater. The edge of the crater was slightly raised. The sensors sensing the altitude noticed that it was much closer to the ground because of the ground going up, not because of the lander going down. And the software assumed that the sensor, the altimeter, was broken and thought that but started using like a different calculation and it was actually like, I think 2 miles up and the lander thought, or the software made the lander think it was already landed.
Where on the moon was this meant to land? Like if I have a big enough telescope, can I look at the crash site?
No.
Oh. Okay.
No, but come on. Like, otherwise you would see the Apollo, the flags that they left, and the landers that they left there. Like, you would see all of that stuff, and you can't really see it with the telescopes.
No, but we can. I remember if you can shine like a laser at the moon, and you'll get light back, which proves that there's metallic objects on the moon, which is proof that mankind. So, you know, we can infer that there is man-made stuff on the moon. Because, but okay, whatever. Yeah. Yes.
If you work at NASA and you want to explain this to us, you're welcome to join us.
But if you work for the Japanese space station, we don't want to hear from you because you've clearly made a mistake.
Also, you probably speak Japanese, which our listeners don't. So, you know.
That would be a very funny conversation.
Like a PhD in like astrophysics or like orbital mechanics speaking to us. And we're like, yeah, so how's your beer? Yeah.
But we're like proper Karens. So we're kind of like, speak English.
So why did it crash? Can I speak to your manager?
Yeah, I want to speak to your manager. Oh, another Japanese.
Yeah. So that's it. I think this concludes the Japanese lander saga on Dez and Marco. In other news, Dez is a big fan of foldable phones, and there's a new kid on the block.
Oh, Marco, I was so close to pushing the button or pulling the trigger or whatever. We were speaking about the Pixel Fold, which is Google's interpretation of the foldable. And then, as you said, it was they've chosen to go with the format where it opens up like a book. So it's a, let's say, pretty much like a normal smartphone, and it opens up in landscape.
Of sorts, yeah.
Yeah. So the only flip phone, which is reminiscent of the old flip phones, is the Galaxy Flip series, at least in the US. In Europe, there's a few other options, like the Oppo Find N2, which is interesting. And I think the Honor and Huawei versions are available. I would argue that those are built better than the Samsung, but they have inferior software and they have a few quirks as well. But now another huge name is throwing its hat. They already have a previous version, and it's Motorola. But they have completely upgraded the phone from every aspect. It's got a brand new design. They've ditched any sort of callback to the old Razr. So it's been redesigned without the chin, and they've gone for a brand new design, but it's still got the Razr nomenclature. And I have to say, it looks beautiful, and it's going to have the more Western-focused software. So it's got like a pretty slim version of Android, not like a Chinese heavily skinned version. And it looks incredibly promising. The standout feature of the one which has been released, which is Motorola Razr Plus, also going under the name of Razr 40 Ultra outside of the US. So the outstanding feature, or the, let's say, unique selling point, is that it's the first one which has pretty much an outer full screen display on a flip phone, which is looking incredibly handy because you can actually use that as a mini phone.
Yeah, you can run actual apps, like instead of just showing widgets of like, or notifications of your texts or the weather or whatever, you can actually use this as a phone without having to open it.
It seems that there's also other really good software features about this, in terms of continuity between using an app on the outside screen and then following on in the inside screen. We still haven't got full camera performance tests, this, that, and the other, but the first impressions are really good. And the exclusive variety of this phone is made in collaboration with Pantone, the paint company, the color company, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't actually know what they do, but they're known for their naming colors, I guess.
Yeah. And apparently the color of 2023 is this magenta, and they've made this magenta phone, which is kind of more like on the red with a slightly fuchsia edge to it, which looks beautiful. But what I like about it is that it doesn't have a glass back. It's got vegan leather on the back, which, yeah, I think will give it like a really interesting texture.
Yeah, especially as it wears out.
Exactly. So as I was saying, that's the Razr Plus, and we're talking about this vegan leather back. Another very interesting thing, which unfortunately hasn't been released just yet, and no one's had any hands-on, but there's also the less performance-oriented focus model, which is the Razr 40, so just normal Razr. It's going to have a very small screen just for notifications on the front. Other than that, it's got a slightly tweaked down chip, So the Razer Plus 40 Ultra, so the Razer Plus, is going to have a Snapdragon 8 Plus Gen 1, which is last year's top chip, which is still very good. And I don't think anybody's got any complaints about that. But the Razer, let's say the less good one, has got the Snapdragon 7 Gen 1. Still a very good chip, still fairly efficient. But the great thing, which I'm really interested in, is that it's got a 4,200 milliamp hour battery. That's like full smartphone 11 battery in a foldable.
Yeah. And I remember your stint with the, what was it, the Galaxy Fold?
Flip.
I want to say.
The Flip, yeah.
Three. And that was your, like, that was the one reason that made you return it.
Yeah. Because
the battery was just not good.
Looking at the specs, I'm curious to see what the difference is going to be. So I know that the cheaper version, and it's meant to be significantly cheaper because the Ultra, it starts at $1,000, and they haven't released the pricing of the cheaper one. The cameras seem to be quite different, but the camera with the higher numbers, like 64 megapixel main, is actually on the cheaper variant. So unless there's some software magic there, which makes the other one better, I think this might be a really interesting comparison.
Okay. Is it out yet?
So the Ultra is out. You can buy it now. Razer Normal, so the non-Ultra version, is not. You can pre-order it on the UK website. I can see the pricing for both. So again, it's, I think, £1,000 for the Razer Ultra, 40 Ultra, whereas the Razer 40 is the non-Ultra version. I have no idea. I had seen this before, and now I can't see it. Give me a second. Where can I buy? Buy!
Stick around to see Des buy in real time a phone that he doesn't want.
Okay, this is something interesting. They're all sold out.
Okay, well, good for Motorola,
I guess. For Motorola. As we get better reviews on them, we can always revisit this. But anyway, let's move on to our main.
Yes, so this past couple of weeks, two major series ended. And I wanted to talk, I'm a big fan of both. I wanted to talk a little bit about them. I know you've seen only one of them, but anyway, hopefully I can recommend a really good one for you. And that series is Succession. It is incredible. It's the story of this patriarch, media mogul, kind of Rupert Murdoch kind of character who's aging, obviously. He's getting older, and he kind of wants to, or he hints that he's starting to look for his successor. And his, or at least three of his four children are all fighting for who, or for the throne, essentially. Season four just ended, and so did the whole series. And it ends in a pretty, like, endy way, as in there's no door open for any spin-offs, any sequels or anything. But the series itself is incredible. And season four, I think, is one of the best seasons ever in a series.
I've only heard really good things about it. I haven't got around to watching any of them. And that's because it's not easy to get over here because it's an HBO series. Am I right?
It's on HBO here. Yeah, so I guess it would be Sky in the UK.
Which, ironically, is owned by Rupert Murdoch. See what they did there?
Wow.
So, no, I haven't had a chance to watch it. It's on my to-watch list. I did sail the high seas, but I clicked on the wrong link. So I ended up downloading Severance instead, which is a completely different show.
Yeah. Speaking of mistakes, so so I started watching it when season two was ending, right? And because my wife kept telling me, you have to watch it, you have to watch it, it's great, it's amazing, you're gonna love it. So I start watching it, and I start from the beginning. I watch episode one of the first season, and then I watch the rest of the season, and I'm kind of thinking, like, okay, this is okay, it's not great. Also, people keep referencing stuff that never happened, and so, like, what's going on? And then when it came, when I got to the end of the season and I was ready to start season two, I realized that I had watched season two. So basically I watched season one, episode one, and then season two, episode two. I skipped an entire season, and like I had no idea what was going on for half of the season two, and then, you know, like stuff happens, and then you're like you kind of start following there. And so if you watch it, Des, don't make the mistake I did. Watch every episode, don't just skip an entire season. But season four is the one that just ended, and it's the one that kind of wraps everything up. I'm not gonna spoil anything. Let me just tell you, this ending is perfect. You know how many series have been completely ruined by not so great endings? Like How I Met Your Mother comes to mind.
Yeah, that comes to mind.
But this one is just like spot on, because the series itself, like the characters are just so well developed, and you know what drives each of the son, like the sons and the daughter of this guy, what drives them and what they want to achieve and how they want to achieve it, and how they're all backstabbing each other, and how they're also backstabbing the father, and the father backstabs them back. You get to see what everybody gets at the end, like their fate at the end, which is just like super, super good. The whole season, the last one, right from the start, it keeps you on the edge of your seat. You just want to know what happens next, and there's curveballs, and there's stuff that you're not expecting happening, and like it just builds up to like the finale, which is quite surprising.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Part of the appeal of the show is that this tycoon, so to speak, which is planning his succession, the whole family is incredibly wealthy, like beyond rich. This is a family which is essentially dysfunctional in their wealth.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Plus, he's like the patriarch is womanizer. He has a couple of ex-wives. He has a current wife, but he's still kind of like seeing other. He was never there for his kids growing up, and they're all screwed up in different ways. And you can kind of trace that back to how he treated them. But at the same time, they're all insanely wealthy, and there's the series itself has these amazing locations in like all over the world, private jets, yachts, and things like that. So yeah, all of the characters are pretty screwed up people, and who are used to be in an environment where people screw each other up or screw each other, and it's reflected, and like you kind of want to root for one of them, but they're all horrible people in the end.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the cast here, and I wasn't sure if I remembered this correctly, but it's got Kieran Culkin in there, which is Macaulay Culkin's little brother, which is a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, the guy who was in was the roommate in Scott Pilgrim Saves the World.
Yeah, and then the other one which I'm quite interested in is Alan Ruck, which was in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Yeah, and he was in this series that was in the 90s, back in the day, that was called Spin City.
Yes!
If you remember.
Of course, it's great. With Michael J. Fox.
Michael J. Fox, yes. And yeah, and that was like, he was doing that series when he had to retire due to his illness.
So, amazing cast, amazing locations, well written, four tidy and well executed seasons. So, you're telling me that this is a TV series which has maintained high standards throughout its run and ended on a high.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And you know how series, like, by the time they get to, like, their, like, fourth, fifth season, maybe they're not as good? This, the fourth one is the best one. It's so good. Everything wraps up. All of the stories, they kind of, they end. Like, it's neatly tied up. And you get to see how each of these characters end up. So it's quite interesting. If you have the time, Des, you have to watch it.
I will definitely watch it. Everyone's only said good things about it. As I said, I even set some time aside to watch it, but I made that silly mistake where I downloaded the wrong series, and I was like, Anyhow, on a side note, you're talking about how it's really well written. I'm very curious to see what happens in TV in general, because there's going to be the writer's strike. And I suspect we're going to get a serious dip in the quality of shows over the next couple of months.
Yeah, or maybe even further out, as in if they're not writing right now, that's probably a show that will air next year or something like that. But
I've already heard of some delays in shows and films which are being produced for that very reason, because of the strike. I don't know. This happened before. Remember, it happened, I think, in the noughties. Yeah, and there was a serious dip in the quality of TV shows around that time.
Yeah, I remember there was one, I was watching like a documentary about this one series or this one movie, and I cannot remember what it was, where they basically said that they half-assed it because there were no writers.
Oh, God.
So there you go. But there's, on the flip side, pun intended to the flip phones, there's another great series that recently ended, which is Ted Lasso. Season 3, which was the last one, not that good.
No, I have to agree with you. So we spoke about this during the pandemic. In that pandemic year, Ted Lasso kind of came as a breath of fresh air, a fish out of water scenario of this wholesome, very American, very clean cut football coach who gets transported to do European football, so soccer for the Americans, and is very much a fish out of water. Doesn't understand British customs, doesn't understand the sport, doesn't understand the club structure. And there's a little bit of a story because you kind of see that they hire him for a reason, because there's some history between the current club president and the previous owner and so on and so forth. And we had very good things to talk about the show. It was friendly, it was funny, it was fresh. Season 2 came along after a year, delay, just took a year for season 2 to get made and get released. A lot of the storylines were kind of carried on, but they just ended, like, there's a relationship which forms between one of the main characters and let's say a peripheral character who becomes a main character, and then that just suddenly ends.
Yeah.
I think that's very much the theme in season 3. I don't know. I don't know if they tried to do too much or if they didn't have decent storylines. But it seemed like every episode there'd be like a new drama, and whatever was happening before just kind of ended.
Yeah, and that's the main issue that I have with this season, is there is way too much going on. Every character of which, because now it's a football team, and something that they've done, I think, pretty well is they've developed the characters, but it's a football team. It's like at least 11 people, plus coaches, plus owner, plus peripheral characters, and every one of them has something, you know? There's the one that opens a restaurant, the owner that does something, and the coach that does something else, and there's like four people in the coaching staff. There's just so many characters, and they try to kind of develop all of them and move their storylines forward, and it just becomes a mess ultimately. There's way too much going on. And one thing that I noticed that they did a few times throughout this season is, for example, they'll tell you something like a key or like a small detail in episode 2, and then they'll pick it up in episode 6. And so by that time, you have forgotten what it was. So to give you an example, there's one episode where Ted comes up with a new tactic for the team, and it's based on four principles. And he tells the players, so principle 1 is X, principle 2 is Y, principle 3 is Z, and principle 4 is like, I forgot. And then he doesn't tell them, and then they don't speak of it for like 4 episodes. And then on the last episode, he's like, oh, right, now I remember what the fourth one is. But by that time, you've forgotten the first 3.
Yeah. Another little bugbear of mine was, again, on the same theme. A lot of the topics they were picking up and trying to write episodes about were very noble and very interesting topics. But I don't think they could give them enough emphasis in the single episode format, essentially. So they try to tackle things like homosexuality in sports. They try to tackle things like racism. They try to tackle things like mental health. But because of what you said, there would be like a scene where, you know, a major character, I don't want to give away any spoilers, starts to see a psychiatrist or a mental health worker. And that's fine. And then as quickly as it started, it's just not mentioned again until you see the psychiatrist again at the very last episode, like for no reason.
Yeah. And the very same psychiatrist that is a major character in season 2, in season 3, just basically disappears and reappears at the end, basically like cheering for the team. And what happened? Because, I mean, one of the themes of season 2 was that Lasso has panic attacks, and so they open up the theme of mental health, and then it just kind of goes away in season 3. Like, he's fine.
Yeah, they cured mental health.
Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, like the homosexuality in sports theme, which is, you know, like, it's pretty important. And they have one episode where they talk about it, and then that's it.
And the greater issues, I think, are not given as much weight as they could have. And I think these things, maybe taken in isolation and stretched over a season, could have been very well explored. But I feel like maybe they knew the time was up. Maybe they couldn't really develop the plots. They just said, okay, we had all these ideas. Let's put them all into season three and then we'll call it a day. And I don't think it really worked. And the most important thing was season one was funny.
Like laugh out loud funny.
Yeah, it was charming. It was, you know, you watched it with a smile on your face. I loved that the episodes were like between 20 and 30 minutes. Season three, the last episodes were all over an hour. Like I was fed up.
Yeah. It was really long. And yeah, and it's not funny. That is the worst thing. Like that's the worst thing a sitcom can do. I feel like in season three, the characters all became kind of caricatures of themselves. Like Roy Kent, who season one, best character ever. Season three, he's just, you know, like, oh, I need to be the grumpy guy. But I'm also nice because that's how I develop. But I need to be grumpy. I don't know. It wasn't great. I did like some episodes. There's one episode that takes place in Amsterdam, which is just so spot on, which I loved. Other than that, yeah, it was pretty weak. And also the ending, it was fine, but nothing great. Anyway, they always said that this was going to be a three, like that the story that they have envisioned was for three seasons. So it should be over. There has been, as far as I know, there's no confirmation on whether they're going to be picked up for another season or not. The story pretty much wraps up. And it's a pity because it's like you said, pandemic, everybody was depressed, everybody was angry, upset, whatever, and this super wholesome, super positive, super happy guy comes along and kind of lifts everyone up. Either way, great series. Sorry that it has to, that it ended like that, but yeah.
I would still wholeheartedly recommend season one. Just watch season one.
Oh, yeah.
It ends, I don't know if they knew if they're going to renew it or not. It had that sort of whatever happens, happens kind of attitude to it. Like, it got greenlit for season one. They gave it their best shot, and I think they hit the mark. Season two and season three, I genuinely think you don't need to watch them, especially knowing how season three turned out. Stick to season one.
Yeah, I agree. And then finally, Des, we said that we were going to share our first thoughts of Tears of the Kingdom. And what do you think? I'm curious to hear your opinions.
I am really, really enjoying it. It feels like everything from Breath of the Wild, which is arguably one of the best games ever made, maybe the best game made on the Switch. And it made that game, which when it came out felt so complete, it makes it feel less complete. This is like taking everything and made it richer. So the engine feel is the same. It's set in the same map. But obviously time has passed and that's reflected in the map. So, you know, geography is the same, but like villages which were initially destroyed have been rebuilt. Areas which were once desert are now forest and that sort of thing. But they've added on these sky islands, which are areas that you can travel to by being shot up into the sky. And there's several ways to reach the sky, which is also just incredible fun. But they've also included the depths, which is kind of like a cavernous, dark, gloomy setting with a history and geography of its own. It really puts that focus on exploration. Even though you already know the main map, you're keen to discover what's changed. And then you've given these two whole new areas to explore, like the sky and the depths. The mechanics of the game are such that exploration, experimentation are all encouraged. And it's done so in a, I find, a very user-friendly and easygoing way. I've barely scratched the surface of the story. I've kind of just about worked my way around some of the maps. I've still got so much to explore. Usually if a game's too long with like just filler content and a huge massive map for the sake of having a huge massive map, it can sometimes turn me off because I'm like, I don't have the time to explore all of this stuff. This has got such a high level of Nintendo polish that I think it's just incredible. It doesn't feel like a chore.
Yeah. But also, you know what it is? It's the fact that, so first of all, I love that the Switch, you just turn it on and it's on and you're in the game. Like you push a button, maybe 3 seconds pass and you're playing. So you don't have to wait for the thing to boot, and then the game to boot, and then the OS to, and then the system updates, you know, that kind of stuff. You just turn it on and you start. And also, because there's so much to do, for example, you can go after, like, go explore the depths, or you can walk around a group of sky islands, or you can do a shrine. All of that stuff by itself is like 10 minutes. So you can drop in and out of the game. Like, you can go, like, I shouldn't say this, but I've played in between meetings at work when I'm working from home, because it allows me to do that. So I can turn on the Switch, play a little bit, and then, like, do one thing and then quit. But, or you can also do, you know, like, the 6-hour playthrough of the game that, like, I did today. One huge benefit that this game has, in my opinion, is the fact that I played already and I got used to its prequel. So remember when I had just gotten it and I kept asking you, like, okay, what am I supposed to do here? There's no instructions, there's no waypoints to there, and you just said, just go and do whatever you want. And now I know this, so I'm enjoying this from the start. Like, if I see a group of enemies that are too powerful for me at the moment, I just run past them. While before I would just kind of like stop and try to beat them and then die continuously. It's just that feeling of seeing something in the distance and wanting to go check it out. And on the way there, you get distracted like 15 times and then you end up doing other stuff. It's just unique to this game and unique to this special kind of open world games. Other than that, it's exactly what you said. It's just Breath of the Wild, but better in every way. And yeah, the cool mechanic here is that your powers, so you have the powers to merge objects, merge them also to your own weapons, and essentially you can build robots. And if you go on YouTube and you search like best robots of Tears of the Kingdom or whatever, you see these incredibly elaborate contraptions that then just kind of like shoot lasers and shoot bombs and I'm like merging two sticks and I feel great about it.
So my friend sent me a really funny TikTok short, and it was a clip from the series Mythic Quest, which we spoke about, which takes place in a fictional game studio which runs a massive multiplayer online role-playing game. There's a scene where the character played by Rob McElhenney talks about, oh, what's the TTP? And it's time to penis. And it's basically how long will it take a user to use a feature in the game to draw a penis or make some genitalia-related jokes. Okay. And within a day of this game being released, people were making robots with, like, rockets for penises or, like, you know, helicopter penises. And it was, I just thought, yep, the internet doesn't disappoint.
I mean, of course.
First impressions are incredibly positive.
Yeah, this game's perfect.
They have got rid of, let's say, the mini bosses, and they've kind of introduced dungeons again. And the dungeons are obviously not, well, they might be underground, I simply don't know. I've only done one of the main ones so far, and that's set in the clouds. So there isn't really like a mega boss. There's more of sort of exploring an area, which is like a dungeon, essentially. This was, let's say, maybe to appease fans of the old Zelda games. And I think that's the only criticism I've heard of this game, is that the Zelda diehard fans who wanted the linear approach with a dungeon, which you then have to kind of solve puzzles for, this doesn't quite follow that formula. This follows the formula set by Breath of the Wild. Mm-hmm. I personally think it's an incredible game. I personally think that people shouldn't get too stuck up on what a game should be, because they're saying that the Zelda franchise should be this sort of game, and this is a great game, but it's not a Zelda game. And I'm like, a Zelda game can be whatever it wants to be, and this is a fantastic game. You shouldn't let that difference be a hang-up.
Yeah. I agree. We're going to keep talking about it in the coming months, I guess, because I'm nowhere near finished, and I, you know, I'm a bit of a completionist, so it'll take me months before I finish it.
So yeah, great value for money.
Oh yeah, for sure. Anyway, how's your beer?
Average.
Unlike Succession and Tears of the Kingdom.
It's so average. It's so average that I'm going to actually score it lower than an average beer, because this is not an average costing beer. It's actually, you know, a craft beer. It's a bit more expensive than your Heineken's.
Yeah.
But it doesn't taste any better. I find it that for an ale or a lager or whatever, it's a little bit heavy. I find that the hops taste a little bit too roasted, maybe. I don't know. It's just a little bit bitter. It's meant to be this refreshing, ice cold kind of beer, but it's just a bit average and a bit oaty. I really wanted to like it. It's so average that it's disappointing. So I'm going to give it a 2.5 out of a 6-pack. I'm sorry. Wow. But how about yours?
I mean, average. As in, it's a Pilsner. It's like, it's got nothing wow about it. It's good. Don't get me wrong. It's fine. So middle of the road. So I'm going to say 3 out of a 6-pack.
So now those businessmen from the 1300s are like, how can we improve the flavor profile of this beer for our target demographic?
And they will say, let's call it good brand. Anyway, Des, so big episode today. We talked in the news, new Motorola flip phones are out, which you are crazy interested in. The Japanese moon lander crashed, and now we know why. Then two major series of the last couple years came to an end, which are Succession in an amazing ending and Ted Lasso in a so-so final season. And we talked a little bit about our current favorite game, Tears of the Kingdom. Des, good talking to you, and we'll talk again.
See you next time, guys.
And thank you for listening.
Average.